Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod.
Who are you bringing in?
I don't know who you're bringing in. Who do you want to bring in?
I would bring in anyone normal.
A striking national address from President Biden defending his age and his memory.
I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
The events and the election in 9 months. Alex Thompson of Axios joins us.
No Democrat I talked to felt that he did himself any favors.
The stock market rallying thanks to America's largest companies. The S&P 500 flirts with a key milestone. Why that should matter to you with technician Katie Stockton.
4,000 kind of blew right through that. 3,000 did the same. So I don't think it's a really big threshold except psychologically.
Plus, big investments in chips, the semiconductor kind.
We don't have 5 to 7, do we?
No.
Nothing close.
Nope.
Leads us to big questions about the future of technology.
Most of the super smart people in the world are not super bad because they can take their smarts and use them for good things.
And technology's risk to humanity.
You have lots of people who can do super bad things with this help of being super smart. You have a super problem.
But darkness and light, yin and yang, we still have time for the other kind of chips.
Is there anything, something ending in toes that you don't like? Tostitos, Doritos, Cheetos, Fritos.
It's Friday, February 9th, 2024, and a very busy Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning on this Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin, along with Joe Kernan. Melissa Lee is with us today, hanging out. Becky's off.
Melissa's here.
The White House announcing it is allocating $5 billion more in funding from the CHIPS and Science Act. This is meant for workforce development and training and to help set up a public-private partnership that's going to lead to the creation of a National Semiconductor Technology Center. Awards for big-name companies like Intel and Taiwan Semi are still on the way, the Commerce Department saying those should arrive in about 6 to 8 weeks. And speaking of chips, here's a headline for you. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman reportedly wants to shake up that industry in a very big way. The Wall Street Journal reporting that Altman now speaking to investors about an effort to increase global chip building capacity. The cost, the price tag, how much he's looking to raise, potentially as much as $7 trillion. That's with a T, trillion dollars. The drive would be a boon for Altman's own company and its appetite for top-of-the-line computing technology and processing power. The journal saying Altman has spoken with investors from the United Arab Emirates.
Well, I mean, we know that some of those Middle Eastern companies are, you know, they're oil rich. But, you know, I need $5 to $7 trillion. I'm talking to the UAE.
Right.
Well, I mean, we don't have $5 to $7 trillion, do we?
No.
Nothing close.
Nope.
I mean, I just think it's funny to say, well, you know, he wants to raise $5 to $7 trillion. He's even talking to the United Arab Emirates about, the, I mean, what would they be good for? Would they be good for out of the $5 to $7 trillion? I mean, are we talking about a billion? What's that, one gazillionth of $7 trillion? What's a billion? Is that 7,000 billion?
Well, you need a few of them.
$7 trillion is 7,000 billion, Andrew?
Yeah, supposedly.
Seven.
I mean, you look, you know.
You need scientific notation.
Your point is that it's unlikely.
No, I just thought, I think it's funny to say, well, if Sam's serious about this, he's even talking to the UAE. I know they got a lot of oil money, but $5 to $7 trillion, you're talking, that would be a global initiative that would need a consortium of the richest countries in the world to get anywhere close to that. What's our debt now? 33 trillion, right? 33, 34.
Right.
Shares of Expedia are tumbling this morning. CEO Peter Kern announcing that he is resigning after 4 years in the role. Ariane Gorin will take over. She's been with the company for more than a decade, was most recently president of Expedia for Business. Before that, she was an executive at Microsoft. Expedia chairman Barry Diller said the company wanted an internal candidate, determined that Gorin was the best candidate given her exemplary leadership. The company also reported earnings and revenue that beat analyst estimates, but it warned that revenue growth will moderate this year's airfares drop and said the grounding of Boeing 737 MAX 9 fleet is weighing on bookings, that taking the shares lower by 14%. Look for the read-throughs, too, on booking as well as Airbnb.
Can you help me, Sorkin, with, yep, with the AI future and what it means for companies like Expedia? Is it, can they use AI, or does
they are trying to use AI?
Does,
it,
right does now, AI supplant the need for them
to the phone? So they've built it rather into their app.
So they don't go away with AI. Give me a good vacation to Iceland and it could come back with something for you, right? But then you use Expedia to do the booking.
Well, that's the thing. Whether you're using ChatGPT or the new Gemini Advanced or whatever it is, you're going to then use an API into, you don't need to know about APIs. It's going to say, okay, we need to get a plane. And the way we're going to get a plane, depending on the price, is maybe through Expedia. The issue is that if you're using a third-party ChatGPT system, mm-hmm, depending on how it all works, it eventually may start to look for the better price, may start to look for how you're going to use your
miles. I don't see why it doesn't
and
do
so
what Expedia
it does disintermediate.
That's what I mean.
Well, I still think you're probably going to need somebody to
need some service where you're
buying the actual product from, and that's where they have an advantage. They also, by the way, have remarkable data, and that data might be able to feed the AI in a way that an AI on its own might not. That would be the.
You think AI is going to replace everything?
That would be the pro argument.
Worried about.
You?
Yeah. Yeah.
Replacing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we'll talk about the chips later. I'm fascinated by that. When you talk about investments and things, you usually don't talk about $7 trillion. That is deep. And it just shows you, I'm talking about that's what Sam Altman thinks you'd need to really,
yep,
build out AI. That's a lot of power, a lot of computing power. That's human level sentience that is coming soon. And then I'm worried again. Then I get scared again. Not just for me, for all of us.
Mankind.
For hunter killers coming down to make sure that all the hydrocarbon-based or carbohydrate-based life forms are gone, that we don't no longer necessary because they're costly and you got to feed them and they have waste and all the things that humans, all of our frailties, machines aren't going to like those, Andrew.
That's what you worry about?
I do. Well, not for me so much.
Oh, I don't worry
for
about
your
any
children.
Of that. I worry about... You bad don't, people. No, I worry about right now for a bad
you're worried
person.
About Trump winning the election when they have some deep fakes that come in that no, from but, AI. That's your biggest near term concern.
Right now, there are bad people in the world who it's usually hard. If you're, let's say it this way, there are super smart people in the world.
Yes.
Most of the super, super smart people in the world are not super, super, super bad for the most part because they can take their smarts and use them for good things. Okay.
Person who is bad
you give me
who
a life
bought
lesson.
By money.
Of course. But there's also a lot of other people who feel left behind, who are very prepared to do very, very bad things, but may not be currently able to do those bad things at scale because they may not be as super, super smart. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the circumstance that they're in. Nonetheless, if you add AI to that,
mm-hmm,
and then you have lots of people who can do super, super bad things with this help of being super, super smart. You have a super, super problem.
Well, you know,
that's to me the bigger problem.
There's a reason the clock is at 30 seconds till midnight. And shares of Pinterest. It's fun to get back into the things we can get our arms around. That's why you love your show so much, I think.
All about trading.
Just trading, right? You don't have to worry about these big things, the state of the country.
We talk about these things as well.
The state of the country for the next 4 years, given these two?
In different formats, yes.
Okay.
How it impacts sectors like healthcare, et cetera.
Okay, Pinterest shares are lower, earnings of 53 cents a share. Beat estimates, but revenue fell short. Monthly active users rose 11% to 498 million. That was above estimates, but average revenue per user was only $2, and that was 5 cents below estimates. In the current quarter, forecast that came in weaker than expected. The stock initially sank as much as 28% in after hours, but rebounded after CEO Bill Reddy announced a third-party app integration with Google.
I'm pleased to announce our next third-party ads integration with Google. This partnership will focus on monetizing several of our currently unmonetized international markets by enabling ads to be served on Pinterest via Google's Ad Manager. We went live a couple weeks ago, and this is starting to ramp.
That was during the analyst call, and it paired those losses to some extent. Yesterday, President Biden responding to a report from Special Counsel Robert Hur and taking questions from the media about his memory, including this one from Fox's Peter Ducey.
It's totally
how bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Do you feel your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President?
My memory is not good. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed. How'd that happen? You know, I guess I just forgot what was going on.
But a few moments later, after that exchange, President Biden referred to Egypt's president as the president of Mexico. We're going to talk more about that news conference with Axios reporter Alex Thompson. We have an existential problem here. We have two bad. You got one option, and then the other's worse. And I'm a little bit unhappy with some of the people that maybe you associate with that thought that Kamala Harris was the right move. Because there's no fallback, Andrew, right now, and I don't think you can't get rid of her. You can't go around her, can you? What would you do? What should Democrats do right now? Help me, because we're in desperate times.
Well, I think the problem is that there is this bizarre stalemate going on, and it's a game of chicken between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I think that's been the fundamental problem the whole time, which is to say that you have these two candidates who are ultimately quite flawed. Nobody's saying that they're not flawed. But I will say that I think there's a view that if one candidate wasn't there, then another candidate wouldn't be there.
Really?
You don't think so?
No, I don't think the Democratic Party, she's paid her dues, she was vice president. She's next in line. She's the heir to if something. And I think,
of course, she is. But
I think something might finally. It's bending. It may break watching President Biden at this point. I just don't. You know, we're talking about the election's not for another year, and then 4 years after that, he's going to be in. You know, dealing with the hardest problems any individual can deal with, and it's kind of just sad that You know what I'm
saying. Look, I think it's a problem, but it's a problem.
Who? Then who are you bringing in?
I don't know who you're bringing in.
We have Mark Warner on
there. Who do you want to bring in?
I would bring in anyone normal.
Who are you ready to vote for?
You could come up with a few. I was trying to think of some Democrats, and there's a couple I could think of.
That you'd
and
vote
there's
for.
Plenty of Republicans I could
as
think
top of.
Of
the ticket or as VP?
No, as top of the ticket. Plenty I could think of. I'm pining for the days of HW, of good old, read my lips, no new taxes. Bill Clinton.
You'd vote for Bill?
Anyone, it just seems kind of like, wouldn't you?
I don't know. What about if Obama were to come back?
Don't put me there. There's
right?
someone you can.
That's
yeah,
not there even is. Possible.
There's someone you can pick that I would even say I'd rather have these two, and that might be there. Which Obama?
We'll continue this conversation.
Next on Squawk Pod, digging deeper into that presidential press conference and the special counsel's report on classified documents. With Axios national political correspondent Alex Thompson.
This was uncomfortable, but also I think a very infuriating day for the White House that felt that this report should have never happened, that the investigation should never have gone to a special counsel.
Plus, what the Democrats' options are if President Biden withdrew from the 2024 race. That's all right after this.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, Q.
Welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin and Melissa Lee. Becky, obviously, is off today. President Biden yesterday responding to a report from Special Counsel Robert Hur and defending his memory.
I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president. I put this country back on its feet. I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
But later in the news conference, the president referred to Egypt's president as the president of Mexico. Join us now is Alex Thompson, a national political correspondent for Axios. Uncomfortable day just for everyone yesterday, Alex. I felt uncomfortable. The initial report came out and the president responded to it, and then they trotted him back out. They had to later in the night. They're loath to do that, especially when there's questions following it. But they almost had to. It was so bad.
Well, and you got the sense that Joe Biden really wanted to. I mean, what we saw, you know, Joe Biden infamously has a pretty large temper behind closed doors. That's what you saw on display last night. That was angry Biden, as some of his staff sometimes refer to that sort of mode. And so that was one of those things. I mean, to your point, they rarely have Biden go out there. He rarely does press conferences, and he especially very rarely does them televised, you know, late at night. And that's partly because aides have noted that he can at times get tired. He'll make more mental flubs. His stutter will sort of recur when he's a bit tired. And you saw that last night, too, because even as he went out, no Democrat I talked to felt that he did himself any favors. Obviously, he came out and gave a forceful defense. He called out the special counsel for saying that he didn't remember when his son Beau had died. I can tell you that at a House retreat earlier in the day, he very angrily told some Democratic members of Congress that, how the F do you think that I don't remember the day my son died? So this was really white hot rage. But also he ended up at the very end making another flub. When he confused who the president of Mexico and the president of Egypt was. And that comes, the whole context of this is that this comes in the same week where Joe Biden has made a number of errors when talking about world leaders that have died many years before some of the events that he has described. He mixed up former French President Mitterrand with French President Macron. He did the exact same thing also with the Chancellor of Germany. So this was uncomfortable. But also, I think a very infuriating day for the White House that felt that this report should have never happened, that the investigation should never have gone to a special counsel, which would have meant that it would have just been closed quietly with no charges.
Yeah, there was some gratuitous nastiness in the report. I agreed with that to some extent. But the point that the individual was trying to make was that the actual treatment of the documents was careless, and all the photos that we saw. So there's no doubt whether or not you would have brought the case, whether you had right. enough to actually bring the case, but say you're not doing it because a jury won't convict this pathetic old guy.
I think it's very problematic what we actually saw in the report itself. Meaning, there might have been gratuitous nastiness in it, but at the same time. And I say this as somebody who's been on our air and was very critical of former President Trump for what we saw. And I said it over and over. So let me say it right now. What we saw President Biden do was clearly, at least according to that report, not something that was mindless, but purposeful in the same way.
Right.
In the same way. I know President Biden would say it was not in the same way, but seemingly to some degree in the same way.
Right. Those
and that
same.
Should be troublesome but,
right.
to anybody.
Right.
And no matter what your politics are, this should be considered
right.
a problem.
But Alex, the president could fall back on there's not an obstruction element to it, whereas maybe the initial acts were similar, but then.
Right. Correct.
President Trump. So those cancel.
That's the difference. That is a major distinction.
But you're right. The human condition, Alex, we're in denial almost. Everybody, and people age differently. Some guys are in their 90s, are just amazing what you see. And there's some people in their 70s that have lost a step. So it's a human condition. And it just, I don't know whether denial is the, I don't know where it leaves Democrats at this point. I don't know what the options are. But it's really tough to see something that's as clear as plain as the nose on your face, and to just keep saying no, it's fine.
I think you're both right, and I can tell you that behind closed doors, there is a bit of Joe Biden age denialism. He'll often say, frequently, sometimes to the point where people sort of roll their eyes at it, that he feels so much younger than his age. He'll say that he feels so vigorous. And some aides sometimes think that he does not quite realize how he can come across to other people. Now, to your point about the problems of this specific case, yes, the circumstances of Donald Trump's handling of classified documents, objectively, completely different. And Robert Herr actually goes into this in the report, basically says that Donald Trump's behavior was very different, of a different kind. That being said, Andrew's completely right that he was having classified documents just strewn about in his garage. There were pictures in that report that are, especially when he is now saying that he is the most qualified person to be president, that he often says he's the most experienced person to ever be president, which is true. But then why were you careless with these documents? That's going to be something that's on the trail. And, to part of this point of the gratuitousness, what's going to happen? This is not the end. Robert Herr is going to testify in front of Congress. And that is going to be yet another example of this getting in the headlines. And he has to explain to House Republicans why he didn't charge. And he also has to explain to House Democrats why he included all these details. And they may, you're probably going to get a clip of him talking about his interview with Joe Biden and why he described him as sort of an old man who is so forgetful.
Well, the two-tiered justice system, we do mention the, maybe there's a different obstruction component, but as Andrew points out, the initial act, both of them were pretty similar. Right. One was charged, one wasn't charged, and that's going to play into that they're picking on Donald Trump.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, this is sort of the worst of both worlds if you're Joe Biden, because they're still saying two-tier justice system, but now they're also saying, you saw this from House leadership, Republican leadership last night, they're saying if you're too enfeebled to be to be charged, then how can you run for the Oval Office? How can you be president for five more years, which is what he's running to do?
Right. It's tough watching right now. I can't imagine. And even versus a year ago, you can see quite a bit of change, or 2 years ago with Joe Biden. You can see quite a bit of change. So what does that leave? What are the options being talked about behind closed doors, Alex, and with Democrats?
I mean, they don't really have any options. Let's say, obviously some people talk about this sort of wistful scenario, right, where Joe Biden decides for the good of the country or for his own sake or to stop Donald Trump that he withdraws. Okay, let's say that happens. And Joe Biden is the only one that can make that decision. He is going to be the nominee as long as he stays in this race. But the party could potentially tear itself apart if he were to do that, because the primaries are already over, like enough primaries in order to get the nomination. So that means you're heading to a convention fight. Now, Democrats have scheduled their convention for mid-August, which means that you would have a nominee just 4 weeks before some early voting starts. They would only have 4 weeks to introduce themselves to the country. Also, in the convention floor in Chicago, with the migrant crisis, with Palestine, Gaza almost certainly to be going on, the party could really tear itself apart trying to find a nominee. So that's the other option here. Obviously, the vice, Biden could also say, I really think that Vice President Kamala Harris is the person, and that would make a big difference. But both those scenarios, a lot of Democrats think are much worse. So the thing is that a lot of people say, all steam ahead. We got to, this is our
sounds
guy.
It sounds like Weekend at Bernie's. So it's like, it just says, to have to fall back on. If there was ever a no labels possibility, it's not, it can never happen, I don't think, I guess. It's just a fool's errand. But, Hogan Mansion, they're like normal people out there. I don't know if they're totally normal, but who is? But nothing like that could happen, could it? And Kamala Harris, they'd rather run Biden than Kamala Harris, I think.
I mean, it is really striking. I remember the New York Times swing state poll that really started a lot of this polling anxiety with Joe Biden. It is interesting. If you actually look in that polling, which showed Joe Biden significantly down in the swing states, Kamala, because of some of the concerns with his age and because of his poor polling with younger voters, Kamala Harris actually was polling better in those swing states than Joe Biden. That is the level of concern there is about Joe Biden doing this job for more years. Now, to your point about no labels, I still remain highly skeptical of this. There's been no successful third party since the Republican Party started in 1860. Even Teddy Roosevelt, a former president, couldn't do it in 1912. I also think sort of centrism in this age of polarized politics, I just think that there's a limitation to how much voter share that can get.
So it's really possible Donald Trump, President Trump, or former President Trump could be in for four more years. And I don't know what kind of country this is going to be with that happening, with the level of vitriol and everything else, Alex. It's just none of it makes me that. But it's Friday. And Pepsi sent me a bunch of Doritos and stuff for the Super Bowl.
So you're happy?
I'm happy about that.
Should you disclose that?
They sent it to you. We don't need to talk about what you did with it, but
I gave it away.
You gave it away.
I gave it away.
You gave it away. You're like the Giving Pledge. You're like Warren Buffett.
I gave it away.
You're like the Giving Pledge. I did not give it away. I tried every single thing they sent me. My only problem was trying. I don't have enough of those things to put on the top to keep things fresh because I had like
clips. You have so many. Bags.
I have so many bags that I wanted to try. Yeah, and I liked them all. I did. Anything ending in toes, I like.
Cheese will be next.
Still to come on Squawk Pod, unpacking the trends behind the S&P's 5,000 milestone with market technician Katie Stockton. It's important, really.
Look at Japan right now. Look at Europe on the verge of new all-time highs. So the breadth has been such that not only has it expanded from those mega caps to other sectors and stocks of the market, but also overseas.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Together with Delta, we're putting 5G into the hands of ground staff so they can better assist on-the-go travelers with real-time information. From the Delta Sky Club to the Jet Bridge, this is elevating customer experience. This is Delta with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod, where we're talking market technicals, in particular this week's milestone for the S&P 500. Now, it's a market cap weighted index of the 500-ish biggest corporations in the U.S., and it's a pretty good gauge of the health and performance of all American equities. And for the first time in history, this index touched a value level of 5,000. That number is derived by multiplying the market capitalization of each company in the index by the total number of shares out in the hands of shareholders. Some companies are weighted more than others, but they're all in this basket together. The S&P 500's last big market milestone was in April 2021, when the index first hit 4,000 and kept climbing for a little over a year, at least. 2022 was a volatile year across the board for the stock markets, but after the S&P hit 4,000 again in March last year, it hasn't looked back. So now, at 5,000, will the market shy away from its mark? This time, the push is driven by a few select, some might say magnificent, stocks. Nvidia and Facebook parent Meta are at the top of that list. These stocks have done so well that they've outweighed concerns of high interest rates or inflation or layoffs in the tech industry. We turned to a market technician, someone who studies market trends and statistics. Ooh, sexy. But first, maybe we should get a few snacks, fuel up for the technicals. Here's Joe, Andrew, and Melissa Lee sitting in today.
Check out shares of PepsiCo. Adjusted earnings of $1.78 a share, beating Wall Street estimates by 6 cents. Revenue, though, came in below the street's expectation. Frito-Lay North America was also amiss. The revenues there slipped 3%. Beverages also slipped. Quaker Oats was a huge decline versus what was expected, which was up 3%. So we're watching PepsiCo shares down by 1.6%. in the pre-market session.
Yes. I don't know whether it's not a zero-sum game. It doesn't mean Coke's doing better. And they're different companies, really. But I do think Pepsi on Super Bowl. I can't help it.
Because as Super you say, weekend. You like everything with toes.
Anything ending in toes. Is there anything with something ending in toes that you don't
Tostitos.
Like? Except smelly toes or something?
I'm a Tostitos guy.
Tostitos, Doritos, Cheetos, Fritos. It goes on and
but
on and on.
Tostitos are at the top of the list.
They are. They're phenomenal.
Tostitos are the win for the
just
win.
Just plain Tostitos.
Yes.
I don't know. That's some
with
good,
some good salsa.
They've done
and
some,
guac.
You know, I know you like innovation in AI and all that stuff, but the innovation in Fritos has been pretty staggering for the last couple of years.
What, like barbecue?
Chili cheese, twisty, honey barbecue, some really good stuff. Good stuff, good for you too.
I'm a classic kind of guy. I just like the.
You like the Tostitos? You put salsa on them, right?
I like
from a jar, mild or medium.
Hot, but talking about the innovation.
Restaurant style?
I never loved the chip that became like a cup.
A scoop.
The scooper.
I don't like those either.
I don't know. I just like the regular chip.
I don't need more.
Classic.
You know, the scoops can avoid double dipping, though, because you get enough on the first one.
Maybe scoops for a party setting, flat ones for personal use.
That's a good. We'd solve a lot of problems here.
Right here.
Let's take a look at the technicals. Join us now, Katie Stockton, Fairlead Strategies founder, managing partner, and a CNBC a contributor, and she actually admits that she contributes here. 5,000, is that a resistance level now?
No.
What's a resistance level in
S&P?
Well,
I looked back at past sort of round numbers like this in a very non-scientific study and found that it did not act as resistance in the past. So 4,000 kind of blew right through that. 3,000 did the same. So I don't think it's a really big threshold except psychologically. Although I have to say, remember when Treasury yields inched up around 5%? That did become a resistance level, of course, for yield. So there are times at which those round numbers matter a whole lot. But in this case, I don't think so. We still have such strong momentum behind the market across time frames. And I think that's what we want to respect.
It's been confounding a little bit. I wonder about sentiment. Is it positive now? Because all last year it was negative, and we love walls of worry and things like that. Sentiment gets too positive, you have to worry. But lately there's been, I will say, like negative news in the market just seems to melt up by the end of the session. Like 150 points on the Dow is just like, the Dow seems to be good for that almost every day for the last 6 weeks.
You know, I think you can see that the sentiment isn't overwhelmingly bullish in the small caps, right? Or surrounding the small caps that you all have been showing a lot of guests that talk about breath being so negative. Quite frankly, it's really not that bad. We've seen digestion in those breath metrics, which is very natural after a very, very strong breath surge in Q4. So that bearishness, that bearish camp is sort of gravitating towards the area of the market that's not working, which has been small caps, but really only for a couple few weeks. And I think that within the next week or so, we will see Treasury yields probably top out in this oversold sort of relief rally that they've had, and that could occur to the benefit of the small caps. And all of a sudden, we'll look back and say, well, that's a pretty good entry.
The Magnificent Seven went to the Sexy Six, to the Fantastic Five, or was it Fantastic? What's the superhero?
I have no
Fantastic?
Idea what you're talking about. I think the
Magnificent,
biggest market cap companies in the market. Just
some of them. You weren't here. We had the discussion earlier this week that it's no longer seven stocks. What do we decide on? There's four or five now, Andrew, in the Magnificent Seven.
The Fancy Four.
Fancy four. Does that matter? Dropped out. The leadership is narrowed, hasn't it?
We still have very good leadership, but what we've seen is expansion in leadership on the sector front, especially. If you look at the top sectors year to date, it includes healthcare. And that's sort of a new sort of arrival on that front. So as long as we have that breadth expansion on the sector front, I think it's an uptrend that can sustain itself. Financials have really kicked in. Again, the bearish camp is gravitating towards the regional banks and the pullback there. But if you look at the broader financial benchmarks, they're still very strong.
I mean, the market has continued to trade higher as that really dovish scenario that 6 weeks ago people were talking, seven cuts starting in March. That's off the table. And you saw Jay Powell on 60 Minutes. The market's continued to trade higher. What does it say about the 10-year? What's the Is 4.5 in the cards or 3.5?
I would say low threes is very doable from a technical perspective. I don't know why, and that's the hard part.
It's just that the jobs market is so strong and the GDP numbers are so strong. I don't know why yields would go down.
So for me, from my perspective, there's a very meaningful loss of upside momentum that we've seen there. I don't think this is a secular downshift. I think we've seen a secular upshift.
In yields.
In yields, right? I think this is something that could be impactful this year, maybe some, you know, into next year to some degree, based on our indicators. That loss of long-term upside momentum is such that it could be maybe 9-12 months before we get sort of a low in yield. So we're seeing this as corrective, but something that should persist. And if support, which is roughly about 3.8 to 3.9 right now, is broken, then the low threes would be.
Well, unless we get a really more inverted yield curve, then the short end is going to have to come down, and we're going to have the cuts that are now off the table. So they could be back on the table, in your view?
Well, I don't know, again, but, you know,
it's good to be a technician.
I know. Because things are terrible.
That's what I mean.
Right.
So the recession's off the table now, unless one can happen, since no one's expecting it.
You know, I just look at it from a technical perspective, from a trend following perspective, and it's been really helpful over time to judge these momentum shifts, and it's a pretty meaningful one at that. 5% psychologically significant, that makes sense as well. So we want to, you know, sort of view this relief rally that we have seen in yields as something that will be temporary, somewhat fleeting. The resistance for the 10-year is roughly 435 to 440. So below that level, we're looking for them to roll.
So at 25,000 on Bitcoin, you said, well, it looks like we do 30. And then if we get through 30, 36 is next. If we get through 36, and it all happened leading up to the ETF, which happened at about 47,000. What was that for the last month after the ETF? Is some selling on the news, consolidation?
There was definitely a sell the news event there, and we got a proper pullback out of the cryptocurrencies more broadly. And actually, we saw that shift, remember, into Ether in relative terms. I thought that was interesting. Both Ether and Bitcoin have avoided what could have been reversals of their intermediate term uptrends, not the long term improvement, that's preserved, but they were testing some support just really over the past few days. So this rebound that we've seen preserves that support and tells us that risk on sentiment is still very alive and well in that space.
Katie, I'm curious, you know, we've been through much of earnings season, and it is not uncommon nowadays to see huge spikes on the back of news. And I'm wondering what your take is on this and if there's any sort of significance. It seems to happen across, I mean, you had Meta, you had GM, you had Expedia last night. It seems like every single night there's these, massive moves.
And Cloudflare, I think, today.
Right.
It is wild. So the uptrends have given way to gaps up. And usually when you see a gap up in a strong trend, uptrend, it can be exhaustive. But what we've seen from this market is that the gaps are being preserved. So Meta is a great example of that. It hasn't fallen back into the earnings-driven gap up. Mm-hmm. And that suggests that momentum's strong and that prices can go higher. So we like to look at that gap after an earnings report or something
about
of that
Tesla
nature
or Apple?
As support.
Tesla or Apple? That's why I was asking.
Tesla's a breakdown. So
breakdown.
So if any would get knocked out of that
Magnificent
Seven,
Sexy
right?
Sexy Six? Is it five? Are there two that are out? How's Apple?
Fancy Four, Fancy Five.
I think we're at six still. I like Sexy Six.
Just Sexy
Six. Be able to use the word sex. What about Apple? Apple going to lead us higher?
So Apple is, of all of them, sort of disadvantaged from an intermediate term momentum perspective. We're bullish short term Apple. There's an oversold upturn that we want to take advantage of. If it can get through the final resistance, which is about 198 on the chart, that would be a major breakout. But if we can take a moment and look outside of the US, look at Japan right now. Look at Europe on the verge of new all-time highs. So the breadth has been such that not only has it expanded from those mega caps to other sectors and stocks of the market, but also overseas, which I think is a good thing.
It's kind of nice to be able to just talk technicals. I thought you were going to say something about like the economies of Europe and Japan, but you didn't. You're just talking about just going
to
be, and that's safer. You don't really have to, you know,
that's
fundamentals
right.
are
non-controversial.
I was thinking Sexy Six may not be family friendly, so I consulted my friends ChatGPT, which you know I like to do.
Yeah,
they like the Sassy Six.
Sassy Six is good.
The Swanky Six.
Swanky six.
The sensational six.
Do you really think sexy is
a six?
Does sexy have a bad connotation?
Sizzling six.
If you keep revising like sensational. This, if they all break down at some point, what do you call them?
They're just stocks.
They're not magnificent. They're not sexy. They're not sassy. They are stocks, and they perform as they do. And when they stop performing, then what do you do?
It's not fun.
What a party pooper.
Sorry.
On a Friday.
On a Friday.
On a Super Bowl Friday.
Come on.
I think, she's NFL. No fun league. I think sexy is okay in that
connotation. I think sensational is the word.
Sensational?
Yeah. Sensational six.
Sensational, NVIDIA definitely qualifies.
If you sensationalize something, you're doing what Melissa just said we're doing. We're sensational.
You're casting judgment
six,
on a group
sassy
of
six. The sassy six, they got a little sass.
I've never heard a laugh from you like that, ever, in the history of Squawk Box.
A little sass.
God.
I hope that's on tape. That's going to be in your highlight reel.
A little bit of sass on a Friday morning, people.
12 years. I like to take some credit for this.
You've been waiting for me to laugh
12 years. Out of the shell after 12 years. Maybe it's you. I don't know.
There it is.
That was good.
God, I'm thrilled.
That's Squawk Pod for today and for the week. Thank goodness it's Friday. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Big thanks to Melissa Lee for sitting in today. Enjoy your Super Bowl parties, your chips and dips, and tune in to Squawk Box Monday morning or any morning on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And get the best of our TV show right in your ears when you follow Squawk Pod wherever you listen. Have a great weekend. We'll meet you back here on Monday.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.